was sharing there, he really encapsulated what, at least the first part of what I want to share, really well. So it dovetails together very well into my message here. So the title, if there was a title, I kind of went back and forth, but it's The Little Things. I had another title, Little Things Lead to True Riches. And many of you are familiar with that, the verse that I'm taking that from, which is Luke 16:9. I'm just going to read that. It's a few lines, Luke 16:9-13. And I didn't get everything together enough to send the verses to Kevin, so we'll just have to do it the old-fashioned way or have it read aloud to you. It's Jesus speaking. And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least, and there's that key word, least, is faithful also in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to you, to your trust, the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who will give you what is your own? So true riches and your own there are paralleled. We'll come back to that. No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve. Again, it doesn't say it's hard or it's going to be a struggle. It says you cannot serve God and mammon. So when we did the offering, you know, you made a decision about who you're going to serve because your finances speak to you. How many of you have your wallet talks to you? Do you ever have that where your finances talk to you a little bit and say, you know, maybe you shouldn't give all that, or no, there's other people that can give, they'll cover that. You just do a little bit, you know, do a little less. Let's back that up. And, you know, that's just your natural mind looking at circumstances. Not, doesn't mean you're, you know, evil for thinking that. We get tempted with those thoughts. Those are natural thoughts. It's thinking about survival, about accumulation. It's, you know, you're self-centered. We have that piece to us. So we're going to be tempted with those thoughts. But we know that when we give, we testify to something else. So we testify that it's not just this natural world that we're confined to. We're testifying that Jesus Christ, and in fact, was raised from the dead. And it's by his resurrection power that we are able to give to a God that we're not seeing. Okay? So, I mean, that's I know we can say, well, don't disconnect. This is praise and worship too, but it's in a different way. But it's a reminder for us. It's pointing us in the direction that this natural. So when we leave here, we've put ourselves in a position where we've testified that we believe that there's something greater that supersedes this natural world. That's what supernatural means. It supersedes this natural world. So when we say, well, this is what's happening, you know, this is what happens when you get that mono, this is what happens when, and people, oh, everybody's just going to get it, this is what's going to happen. And that naturally, you know, you don't have to look at them and say, you know, get behind me, Satan. They're just repeating what may or may not be true. That's another piece, right? But even if it was true, naturally, you know, we have something that supersedes that, so we can focus on that. But really, the getting lined up, what is least, and being faithful with what is least puts you in a position to inherit or be entrusted with the true riches. So I was meditating on this as part of the men's message for this weekend, just as kind of a supporting scripture, and I've always wondered that, like, what is the true riches? And some of you may have your own impression of what is the true riches. And I always thought, well, the true riches has got to be people. It's got to be people, you know, because people are God's first fruit. It says that he created us as a kind of first fruit. What did, you know, God didn't come to save the planet. He came to save man. He came for people, not the trees, you know, not the dolphins or, you know, bald eagles. He wants us to be good stewards of all that we're given. But he came for people. So I always think, well, a true riches has got to be people. So I was meditating on it, but it, you know, it didn't kind of, I don't know, you know, when you're meditating on something, you're trying to seek the Lord about what does that mean. And I was looking up, where else does it say true riches? And I didn't find too many places where it says true riches. It'll say full riches. And there's a number of scriptures in here we'll go over, but different types of riches, boundless riches. And but true riches seemed kind of like there's types of riches, there's things that are, you know, going to enrich you, but then there's the kind of set aside true riches, you know, like this is the top riches. This is the thing you should most seek after. So I was meditating on it, and it's kind of like, I heard a message from Andrew Womack, and he said that his interpretation was true riches was healing, was health. And because, you know, if you, let's say you're a wealthy person and you're on your deathbed from cancer, he said there's no person that wouldn't trade all that money to be healed of their cancer. So, you know, health and would supersede the value of your monetary or your mammon, let's say, natural wealth. So I thought, well, that's interesting. I'd never thought of that. But then, well, I just was kind of meditating on that. I thought, well, what do people are, that's who we want to bring into the kingdom of God. And I was just meditating on it, and the Lord spoke to my heart, and I don't know if this is totally, you know, 100% thus saith the Lord, but I got the impression that it's not limited to that. It is people, it is healing, and it is natural provision. But it's the way that you receive it, and it's the way that you perceive it. So if you, I'm trying to get this across here the best I can. So your stance about, you know, if you're looking at your financial health, right, and you're looking at your job as your source, or you're looking at maybe some trouble that you're in financially, and you get something that you get a promotion, you know, that's great, and you can get excited. But what can end up happening is we tend to look towards wherever the provision seemed to have come from. We look to that as our source, and you know, God's kind of provision is He maketh rich and adds no sorrow with it. But so the other type of provision that we can get caught up in is looking for, and we can use our skills. We can use, there's a lot of really good things that we do in sowing and just being good stewards that we're going to end up reaping from that, right? You can, I mean, there's people that are not Christians that do really well in this economy, right? It's not like it's only one way, but we don't want to follow that way. We want to do it God's way because He adds no sorrow with it. So you can have monetary wealth and do it in an ethical way, but there's probably going to be sorrow added with it if you're not doing it God's way. And there will be sorrow with it because God's way doesn't add sorrow with it. He makes rich. He doesn't make just get by. He makes you rich. Now, what does that mean? Well, you know, that's a subjective thing, but and so that's not so important to define. But, you know, we limit God most of the time when we try and define that because God's got a way for us that is so much better than what we could ask, think, or imagine. So the true riches, I just saw it as you already have the true riches. So you're sitting here wondering, what is the true riches? What do I do to get the true riches? Or how do I focus? You already have the true riches. They're in your house. I've got my sons are my true riches. My family are my true riches. You know, those are places I can invest in. The people around me that have influence, those are true riches. The provision from God is true riches. It's just my stance toward it. Do I see it as that, or am I like what in Matthew 6 he says that the Gentiles scrounge after these things, but yet if you put my righteousness first, if you seek me in my righteousness, put my kingdom first, then all these things will be added to you. So if you stop sort of seeking and trying, and I just picture that scrounging after, like when, you know, the Black Friday sales, I don't think it happens as much anymore, when people would be trampled. It's really sad. They'd be trampled to get a TV, you know, flat screen TV. And so that's not God's provision, you know, to get a discount. That's not God's provision. He has no sorrow. And when we put his kingdom, his righteousness first, he adds all those things be added to us that we were before thinking we had to have. And what it does is creates this tension in us, this discontentment, that we're always looking at what we don't have as a tendency also for our natural minds, to look at what we don't have because someone else has it. And so we're missing something because we don't have that thing. And so it can create in us a discontent. Well, as a Christian, and, you know, I'm guilty of it at times of looking at those things and thinking, oh, I'm missing something or something's missing. But as a Christian, we should never, never be discontent. Because no matter whether we abase or abound, we can be content because of who we have inside of us. We have the resurrection of power of Christ in us. No matter what our status is in society or, you know, how prosperous we are outwardly, right? We're going to prosper. So if you continue in that, you will outwardly prosper. Because it says that we'll prosper as our soul, and be in health as our soul prospers. It's going to go together. That's like a law of sowing and reaping. So what you're doing tonight, you're investing in your soul prosperity. Your spirit is 100%. Your spirit's perfect. We're not here to, sometimes we say, edify our spirits. I'm not going to get semantics and say that's actually incorrect. But really, our spirit is born again. It's as good as it gets when we were born again. When you were born again, that's it. It's perfect. It's our mind renewal. It's getting awakened to that and keeping our focus on that and reminding ourselves of that, reminding ourselves of that, reminding ourselves of that, reminding ourselves. And no matter how long you've been doing this, reminding yourself of that, reminding, because you've got these other things telling you differently. People, your own self-talk sometimes, and your flesh says it wants to do other stuff than what you have decided is right. So anyway, I'm not even into my notes yet, but what Pastor Sean was saying about we've already got it, you know, I can't remember his exact words, but I was like, that's it right there. We could probably just pack it up and go home. But that really is the first part here is that you know, just being faithful in little things. So if you feel like, well, I don't have a lot, you know, and maybe that's true from a perspective, let's say, of comparison, but we don't really want to get into that anyway, because you could take a small amount. If you think of all the places in the Bible where people had a small amount of goods or a small amount of what was valuable at that time, oil, and she said, well, I don't have much. Well, I'm talking about what's that story? The widow with the cruse of oil, right? Yeah, or cakes and dye, that's another good one. The loaves and bread, you know, and what did the disciples say? We don't have, all we've got is this little, you know, this kid's lunch. And Jesus took it, they were kind of saying, this isn't enough. And he said, well, let them eat. And they said, well, Lord, how are we going to do that? Jennifer shared about that months ago when you were up here. I remember that just now, about the loaves. And Jesus' perspective was like, you know, we're not going to curse this amount that we have by saying it's not enough. I'm going to bless it. Jesus never said that. He didn't acknowledge when they were like, this isn't enough. How are we going to do this? I might have been one of them saying that. That was what the pastor said. All right, grab that kid's lunch and let's feed everybody. I might have said, okay. Like, you know, whatever. They at that time didn't have the Holy Ghost. They didn't have the born-again Jesus. They didn't have their spirits born again like we did. So we got to remember that too when we look back. But so we have, you know, we have the ability. We have a different ability than the disciples did, because we're enabled by Christ in us, the hope of glory. They had Christ near them. You know, they saw him, but they didn't have that born-again reality, you know? Think how jealous they might be to think, are you kidding me, what you're equipped with? Oh, my. I can't even imagine if we would have had that, what we might have done, you know? Now, they did get born again, but so they did, many of them. But some, not the original disciples, but some of those followers, might not have, and the prophets of old, you know, they did great feats. They didn't have a born again spirit. How much more can we expect to accomplish? And we might, you know, just look at our past or think, well, I've never really done some of those kind of wild things. And it's like, well, start with the little things. What do you know you can do? So yeah, you don't have to go up to a funeral and walk in and start, you know, doing something Smith Wigglesworth did that you read in a book where he pulled someone out of a casket, you know, something. So we don't have to do the fantastic, but the supernatural we can do no matter where we're at. Because the supernatural is sharing with somebody and just coming up to someone at work and just saying, hey, you know, I just wanted to check in. How are you doing? You know, you just get that impression that there's somebody hurting. Now, that could be your natural mind just noticing someone's just kind of slumped shoulder and, you know, they're just walking around like something's wrong. But, you know, that's also your spirit's going to quicken those things to you. So those are the little things. How do you treat people? There are servers. You know, there's in the business world, there's people that say that, well, this CEO would always take a prospective interview candidate out to lunch because they wanted to see how they treated the servers. And they would tell the servers at this restaurant they always go, they'd say, hey, bring out something that was wrong because I want to see how they respond to you. And, you know, so they would, that was the job interview, was not so much the conversation, but they watched how they treated the server. And they said, this is how this person is going to treat my employees, and, you know, the culture they're going to create is one of, hey, I'm the guy in charge, you serve me, you know. So we just love to, you know, our pastors have set that example. They love, if you ever go out to lunch with them, they half the time know the server, if it's one of their regular places, you know. And they just talk to them like they're family, and they treat people like it's, you know, just wonderful to see them again. Like it's a reunion, you know? And those servers don't know, I don't know if you ever worked in retail or in food. I used to work in the food industry. I was a cook. And people weren't always excited about you serving them food or the food you made. So, you know, sometimes people are really grouchy and they don't talk to you very nicely and they act like you did something on purpose when it was a mistake and we'll rectify it. But, you know, so those little things you do can make such a big difference. Sometimes my kids tease me because I use people's names. If they have a name badge, I'll say, hey, you know, thanks, John. And they're like, oh. And the person will look at me sometimes like, what? And I'm like, well, no, you've got a name tag. It says your name, you know, like, just being friendly. You know, I just think it honors somebody to use their name and to be polite. Just being polite sometimes gets noticed. Like when our kids are polite to people, they'll comment on that, like, oh, your kids are polite. It's like, you know, that's nice. I appreciate the compliment, but it is unusual sometimes. You know, we're lucky in this church. I mean, we have very polite children in this church. We have kids that can come and sit in church and receive, you know. And so we're blessed. But there's a lot of churches where it's like, if there's no children's church, it's a zoo. I mean, it's just wild. And you know, parents are doing the, oh, honey, can you please, okay, I guess they don't want to do that. You know, God bless them, but parents being parents, there's something to be said for that. And that's the little things. And then when they grow up, you don't put the front loading in, you don't discipline them, they're young, and then they grow up and they're hell on wheels, excuse my expression, and you wonder what happened. And then they say, well, but your kids are easier. You know, your kids are just smart. You know, mine are a little more willful. They're a little more strong-willed. Oh, okay. Okay, that's what it is. Okay. I mean, I get it. There's different personalities. But your kids' personalities, you know, it's like, yeah. Do you remember when they were young and you guys thought we were too hard on them? And do you remember those days, too, when you thought I was borderline, you know, call the cops on me? But anyway, that sounds terrible. But people are so worried about damaging the spirit. No, that's your spirit. When you're born again, your spirit, there's no damaging it. So I got to keep going here. So that which is your own, that verse where it says, if you can't be faithful in that which is little, how can you be given that which is your own? And I was looking at that too. I always wondered about that. Like if I already have, how can you be given that which is your own? It's kind of a, not oxymoron, but it seems a little bit in counter to each other, to say, I'm going to give you that which is your own. It's like, well, if it's my own, don't I already possess it? And again, it's just our, it's sort of like the, I'm just getting this picture of the prison cell, but the prison door has been unlocked. And it's the person who, they're in there, and it's like, well, the door has been open the whole time. All you had to do is push the door open, and but their perception was they were locked in jail, you know? Their four-walled prison cell with their mom as a warden. But it was really his, where he obtained victory was right in that place. So I'm talking about you, Alec, but yeah, so it's that which is our own, you already have it. So it's getting our minds renewed. And you know, even saying that, it's kind of like, I already have it, but I don't see it. Well, by faith you have it. That's how we obtain it, is by faith. It's not by what we see when we look around, because I go, well, I'm missing, I need this to be, financially stable. I need this thing. I need this thing. And it's like looking at what I don't have instead of like, well, what have I already got? He said, like Pastor Mike shared, he gives us power to get wealth, to establish his covenant. We forget that part sometimes, the established part. And man, if we can just keep those priorities, that's why offering time, it is such a key time to train your brain, to renew your mind to this reality. It really is. If you want that to be, if you want to have power to get wealth, that's the place to do it, is in offering time. That is your opportunity. That is such, you know, there's just these windows where you go, gosh, if I could have invested in that at that time, if only, you know, I was thinking about that. We've talked about that before. Josh was talking about that with Google once, right? Like, gosh, there was a time when it just jumped up. Berkshire Hathaway is worth, it's like $100,000 a stock. And at one time, it was worth $500 and 20 years ago or 30 years ago. Man, if you'd just gotten into the ground level. And then it went up exponentially. And it's like, there's opportunities for you to invest and have a harvest of righteousness. I'm not just talking about that hundredfold. Well, I'm going to get my Cadillac. It used to be, now you say Cadillac and people go, what? Is that a nice car? What is he talking about? You know, you have to say, I don't know, McLaren. I don't know what a really nice car that kids want these days anymore. I don't know. Maybe, what's that, Tesla? I don't know. Okay, yeah. Just move on, yeah. Subaru, yes. But it's that which is our own. That I think that's just such a good thing to get our minds around and to really, that's the work of that's laid out before us, is the labor to be at rest with and be content because of who he is in us. Not that we are, you know, that we're just content with our, again, it's not about our surroundings. I'm like, well, I'm content with having, we had a pipe burst in our house this morning, actually. Yeah, so I was like, yeah. So yesterday, Pastor tagged me to, because I opened my big mouth and said, hey, you know, one of us will step up if you need another day, you know, just let us know. And I thought, I just tagged myself, basically. They all were like, yeah, well, you know who that's going to be. And so then I, you know, we had some plans yesterday evening or whatever, so I studied, and then last night I was going to get to bed, get up early, and finish up my preparing for the message, and Jennifer said, the pipes are frozen. It was 11:30. Pipes are frozen. I was like, what? We've been in this house for 3 years, and the pipes are frozen? Like, what? We've lived in a lot of old houses. This is our newest house at 1976, and the pipes are frozen. I'm like, no way. So we're up for like 2.5 hours figuring out what to do and, you know, all this other stuff. We had the drains on our shower were frozen. Like a drain? I was like, what is going on? That is bizarre. And it's a bathroom that's in the middle of the house. It's not an exterior wall. So we were like, this is weird. So we were up to like 2:33 in the morning, got up, had to do a little work and stuff, and then I was out on a showing, and Jennifer called. But I was like, when I get home, I asked her, I said, hey, I've written notes, hon. Can you just type them up for me while I'm out? And she calls me, I'm on the showing, and the pipe burst, and there's water coming through the ceiling and out the vent and, you know, all this stuff, and it's bad. And I said, okay, I'm going to wrap this up. So come home, and, you know, whenever that happens, earlier in the day, I was looking at stuff, like, I can't figure this out, and it's still frozen. And I just pray favor. I just ask for favor, you know? It's like, because you start to try and figure it out in your mind, and then you're like, oh, I don't know, it's frustrating, I get overwhelmed, and I don't know if you've ever been there, but, you know, you can just, it can happen so quick, but you can arrest that right there and stop sowing into that and that panic and the, you know, you almost suffer from something that never, it never happens. And so, yeah, the water's coming in, and I was kind of like, oh, well, water shut off. It can only be so bad, you know. And we finished up the showing quickly and went home, and plumber came out and found the problem, but now there's a big hole in the bathroom ceiling, you know. Cold air pouring in. Ice formed all over our pipes up there. Not all of them, but like ice chunks, like stalactites. So we got to solve that little problem. Kind of figured out what it was. But, you know, I kind of lost track where I was going with that. But it's just knowing, you know, there's going to be little storms in life. I mean, there's things that are going to come our way. But it's like if you get to where you think like, oh, man, I stepped out of my faith walk for this to have happened, or, you know, this isn't victory. It's like, you know, it's you can't let circumstances define victory for you, you know? And the victory for me is I never lost my peace, really. I mean, yeah, I was a little concerned, but seeing a hole in the roof and water coming in through the lights, you know, it's like, okay. But it's like, I just knew. I was like, you know what? We already prayed favor over that. And, you know, it got worse after we prayed. But the end result was it's not going to cost that much to fix. It's way less than we thought. And I might even be able to fix a bunch of it without having to get, you know, spend for one of those companies that come in, they redo or what renovation, you know, from water. And because we thought at first, we called insurance, and they said, well, you got your deductibles, blah, blah. You're like, That doesn't cover the plumbing. And so you're like, geez, this is a little more than we wanted to spend on a burst pipe. So anyway, that's the victory a lot of times. Is we don't lose our peace. And we get through it, and it gets fixed. And we can believe God for the money to do it, you know. So that's like the one testimony I have about our car. The one that Pastor Sean knows so well. We had, does everyone want to hear it again? Yeah. So we had a transmission that needed to be, or we took a car and we didn't know what was wrong with it, and they said, oh, the transmission, and we're like, okay, and they kind of gave us a ballpark, and we got the bill. It was a little more, because there's a couple other things, and it was like $3,200 and some change. And it was a time when that was a lot. We didn't just have that, like, sitting around. You know, like, or if we did, it was meant for other stuff. And, as soon as I got that and I felt that initial report, right, you get the initial report and it can hit you a little bit. Some things start to come up. You start to feel the worry or the, you know, doubt or whatever it is. If it's a health, you know, issue or whatever it might be, a relationship thing can come up and kind of hit you. And I stopped and I just said, I just thank you for favor. We've got favor for this, whatever, however it gets replaced, whatever it's, however you bring it to us, Lord, I'm just receiving it right now. We got favor. I can't remember all the words I said, but like Alec, you know, I can't remember everything I said, but I know I prayed out favor. And I can't remember if it was that day, the next day, within like 2 days or 3 days, we got a check from somebody that we had referred, and we got a referral fee. And it was for exactly $100 over. The change was a little different. The cents, I can't remember what it was, but it was, I think it was, the bill was like $3,205. And the check we got was like 30, what would that be? Whatever it was, 100 more than that. That'd be $3,305. So it was like exactly $100 over. So, you know, that was just, that was the Father not, when he does something like that, it's like his way of also saying, like, remember, I've got you. Because if it had been, you know, some other amount, like $2,800 or something, I'd be like, oh, yeah, that's awesome. There's $400 left. But it was like, you know, I gave you not only what you needed, but I gave you a little more, you know. And that's his nature toward us. And that's what we've got. So once we stop being a slave to mammon, Once we decide, like I said, during offering time, just such a great, I hate to harp on it. That's what my parents and my mom used to say, don't harp on that. But I'm going to harp on it because, man, that offering time is just such, so much stuff can happen right there. You can just turn the path of where you're headed. You can, you know, put yourself in a position to receive. And again, I'm not saying you're buying your healing or you're buying something like prosperity, but it just puts your heart in a position to receive in a way that you know, prayer is a very important way to do that too. If you come when I've come for pre-service prayer, man, that just am fired up for worship. Worship is just like, I'm right in worship, I'm just right there. I'm in the throne room, it feels like. And, you know, that's what that offering does. It puts you in a position to be ready when a thing hits. I don't wonder if I'm worthy. And again, it's not because I'm looking to my works. I'm not saying, well, I tithe, therefore I can speak favor over this, and you owe it to me. But I just know, because I've trained myself to trust God. That's what it's about. It's not about what's owed me or I did it so I deserve. It's, no, I have trained myself to trust God in this area. I don't do it perfectly by any means. I'm not saying that, but it's helped me to more quickly turn to God and trust him with these things. Now, there's plenty of times when I try and do things on my own. I try and sort out problems on my own and work and deals going on, and I've just realized, I catch myself like, why am I still trying to figure this out? And it's like it's like running in mud uphill or something. It's just so like it's going nowhere. And then as soon as I submit and receive help, as soon as I step back, and that posture changes to one of, instead of I'm going to solve this, and then the overwhelm and the pressure, it just is like a release. It's like a heavy jacket or something that's just been weighing you down. Just a weight comes off, and solutions just start falling in place. It's just, and the further I go on my own, it seems like because I get to the end of myself for real, where I'm really crying out and just throwing myself at the mercy. And God loves that. But I've just learned, like, I'm going to do that quicker because I have to esteem myself differently. You know, so there's a part of that. So it's just such a great training ground for us, this offering time. I want to get to one point and then we'll wrap up. Like I was saying, there's a book called Acres of Diamonds, and it's an old, some of you are shaking your head, Russell Conwell, and I believe is his name, and he is a Christian, and he quotes some of the scriptures I've mentioned today, and he did this speech. He would travel around, I think it was in the 30s, it was early 1900s, I'd have to look it up for sure, but he would travel around and give a speech about encouraging people that they've already got it. This idea that you aren't lacking. Look around you. You have acres of diamonds right where you're at. He would tell these stories of farmers who they heard about the gold rush, so they sold their property. And the people that bought that property from them found oil, you know, discovered gold. And then, you know, in the Far East, this prince that wanted, he was told he had to get diamonds, so he spent all he had trying to find diamonds, and he ended up killing himself because he was so frustrated and depressed because he had spent all he had, and turns out his property had sold had diamonds, tons of diamonds in them. And so he would tell this story to people and encourage them that, look, you might think that, you know, somebody else is more talented, or that's why they're able to prosper, or they're better looking, or they are more well-spoken, better educated, come from better breeding. All these things that are excuses for us, why we're not supposed to prosper. But he said, look at what you have. Look around you. You have acres of diamonds. And that really is where you look around the people that you have around you, and investing in those people around you, and it's, you know, the old adage about it's not what you know, it's who you know. And obviously that goes to a certain point. You have to develop skill. You have to be a good steward of your gifts and talents. But, man, there's something about being connected, those divine connections. Look at our pastors who they're connected to at Rhema. You know, Tony Cook is he's an international minister. He's known around the world. Doug Jones there's not a finer teacher on this planet. I mean, there's some people that had a more impactful message at the time because there wasn't as much of it going on. But, I mean, Doug Jones, I think his teaching is just, and everybody gets ministered to by different people. So, that's a subjective evaluation. But, start with where you're at. I'm just going to finish this portion with one story, and then I'd just like to talk about our pastors real briefly. I'll probably get in trouble, but I'm honoring them, so it's a good thing. So there's a guy I know, and this just encouraged me because he does really well. Like, he's got, he's financially independent. He works because he wants to. He has ministry that he's involved with overseas, but just got to know him a little bit, and he started telling me his story, his journey, and he's real open about how he came to have financial independence, be wealthy. And he was a chef, and just working as a chef. He went to Le Cordon Bleu, never went to college. He just went and got his chef's degree. And he was working an event, and he met this guy and said, "Hey, I'd like to have you cook, for people at my house, or I want to do this event." And I said, "Okay." So he did a couple events for the guy, and then he started working for the guy in his apartment buildings. This guy was a doctor and had 5 apartment buildings, and he needed somebody to help with maintenance. So this chef just started doing maintenance, cleaning toilets. And then he was faithful with that. And the guy said, "Hey, I need you to manage my buildings. Can you help manage this building?" So he started doing that. And then the guy who oversaw all his investments retired. And he said, "I'd like you to oversee all my investments, all these 5 buildings." And so he took it over, and he saw a way to make these buildings that were costing him money every year. It was an investment, so he saw it as accruing value, but it cost him money. He had to, always be paying money out for, just bad tenants and, different things that cost money in an apartment building that can be real deal breakers. And so he turned it all around within like 18 months to where every building was producing wealth, producing an income. And then he took that money and reinvested and bought 7 more buildings for the guy. So he was just managing this other guy's money, okay? And so he had now 12 buildings that were all producing income and accruing value. So he was like the good steward, and he saw a way to be aggressive with, hey, let's do some better practices and get, build this thing you've got. And so then he ends up being a companion to this guy as he ages and wants to travel, and he says, "Hey, will you travel with me?" And he worked in his home and just managed all of his personal finances after he did all this, good stuff with his, building. So the guy passes away and leaves him with a bunch of these buildings. So he leaves him an inheritance, leaves him his home. And, he started off as a chef. He started off in a job that, he wasn't going to make millions. But he was faithful, and he took opportunity, and he was faithful with that, faithful with that, faithful with that, and he kept showing himself faithful. And sometimes we look at where we're starting and we think, how is this going to, turn out? Look at where I'm at. I'm a loser. You might even do that self-talk. I'm a loser. It's like that's the kind of self-talk that's just going to get you to stay there. And focusing on and saying, well, who knows? Maybe I'll be that next guy. Let's be faithful with what we have right in front of us. Martin Luther King talked about whatever you do, do it with excellence. If you're a janitor, be the best janitor. That kind of attitude where that's going to get noticed. That's going to promote you. So lastly, I just want to talk a little bit about Pastor Dwayne and Pastor Mary. I'm kind of fired up for them for this year to increase their designations, okay? And so I'm on the compensation committee for the pastors. I think most of you know that. I'm going to talk about that. We're all family and members of the church here, so it's not like a awkward subject if there was a bunch of visitors. But I'm believing for this year to be a big year for them for designations. So that's something that I got stirred up about years ago. Pastor Sean shared with me about how, I can't remember exactly what he said or what his practice was, but about giving to pastors specifically. Not just tithing, but, I give to pastors. We were just talking about the tithe. I can't remember. It was really early on when we started coming to church. And I was like, oh, well, that seems like a good idea. You know? So we started giving regularly to the pastors. And it puts you in a position, again, to receive from somebody. So Jesus talks about sheep without a shepherd. Right? How are sheep without a shepherd? Not good. They're vulnerable to attack. They're lost. My sheep are lost without a shepherd. Lost. That's Christians he's talking about. They're lost. I mean, he might be also referring to others. But think about the Christians that are lost because they don't have a shepherd. You can be in a church and not have a shepherd, too. I mean, it's up to you to sort of draw on that. Obviously, there's divine connections and stuff and divine appointments, but it's up to us to draw on that and decide, that's my shepherd. Obviously, Jesus is the shepherd. I'm not talking about that he's, make idols out of a pastor or anything like that. They're human, but that puts us in a position to receive in a different way. There's also protection from a shepherd, right? That's good stuff. I want protection. If you're out on your own, man, you don't have the protection of that shepherd. The shepherd has defense against wolves. He keeps the pack together. There's unity under a shepherd. So I just want to encourage us to get involved with designations to even greater degree this year. I know so many people in here are so faithful, and it's wonderful to be a part of that. I'm just going to read a couple scriptures, and then maybe we'll just wrap it up there. I wrote down here some of the diamonds that we have been given are our head pastors, Dwayne and Mary. We might take it for granted sometimes because we have been here for so long and we're so used to them. But there's so much we can gain if we follow them in the spirit of unity. 1 Thessalonians 5:12. Now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to appreciate those who diligently work among you, recognize, acknowledge, and respect your leaders who are in charge over you. And we ask that you hold them in the highest esteem and love because of their work on your behalf. Live in peace with one another. 1 Corinthians 9:9, it is written in the law of Moses, do not muzzle an ox while it is treading out the grain. Is it about oxen that God is concerned? And then that verse is actually repeated. It's taken from Deuteronomy 25:4. And it's also repeated in 1 Timothy 5:18. So, when Paul is repeating this in 1 Corinthians and in 1 Timothy, it's of some importance. And, Paul repeats in multiple places, talks about, I don't want it for myself, I want it so that it goes to your account. And, there's never a one-way street with giving and when it's in God's way. We give and we receive. There's always an exchange. I hope that's taken the spirit of just, it's put us in a position where we have gone to pastors many times for wisdom about big decisions and just tapped into that wisdom that's not just from them, not Dwayne and Mary, which they're wise people, they've got a lot of life experience, but we've tapped into Christ in them. We've tapped into that anointing that comes with being the pastor. Man, it's made a huge difference for us, even especially when we were just starting out, trying to discern, how do we know what's the right thing to do here? I don't know if you ever had that conversation with Pastor Dwayne and Mary. Do you know what the answer would always be, right? What would they tell us? What would they tell you? I couldn't hear you. What's the word say? And follow peace. That was always the big one, too. What does the word say? But then it was also like real practical, like, follow after peace. What do you find yourself daydreaming about? There was such wisdom about, they never told us, like, here's what you should do. They never did that. Probably because they know the perils of doing that. Now I'm taking responsibility for your decision because I told you what to do. They're wise to not do that, right? That's no fun. But anyway, I just encourage you, we're going to purpose to designate to our pastors, continue to do that, and to lean into that and to listen to God about different times, because there's been times where I just felt impressed to give to them, and they're like, thanks a lot, that really helped. I mean, we've been here for 22 years, 23 years now. You know, so, I mean, there's been different times where there's been financial struggles. I'm not talking about, like, right now, like, hey, everybody, we go to the rally. That's not what it's about. But there's just been different times where like, that kind of giving, that's really fun to be a part of that. To have, you know, to give to somebody, and they say, like, that really made an impact, you know? Like, that was so timely. Just be like, wow, God used me in my finances, you know? Like, that was fun. It's really fun. It's just like when you give somebody a gift they really want, they're just like, oh, thank you. And you know it, like, just touch them. It's a wonderful thing to be part of. So let's be part of it even more and more. So, well, thanks for listening. I'm going to turn it over to Pastor Sean.
What's so awesome about Mr. Dunn is that his heart is all.
Water of, you know, those servants and servers going and filling the pots with water. The woman who went and got all the pots she could gather and went and got them filled with, the oil just kept coming. And every one of those examples, the obedience part didn't require some amazing feat of faith. Like, step out of the boat. I mean, like, we can all lift up, most of us can lift up one leg and step out. And so just be encouraged by that word of you know, obedience is always enough. Because there's a God side and a man side. I love being a giver, and I don't boast on myself because I'm a three-part being, and I'm a spirit, soul, and body. But the Spirit of God that's alive on the inside of me, the very nature, the character, the existence of who I really am, is that of a giver. I can't get away from it. So I love to give every day, every opportunity I can. And so I was praying about who to give to a particular time, and I got an amount that was so small. And it was to give to somebody that I hadn't really sown into before. And I thought, well, this can't be right. I mean, I want to give thousands of dollars, not like tens of dollars. And as clear as day, God said there's no need too big and there's no need too small. No need too big. So sometimes we think, well, I got to go big and grand, and well, with God, all things are possible. But with God, even the little things, like Sean's entire message, with God, the little things are possible. It's possible to step out in faith and do the seemingly littlest of things. We know the stories. We know about the widow's mite. We know all this stuff. And I just want us all to walk away here tonight encouraged with that, that our obedience is always enough because it's our job to simply obey and then do. And there's no need too big and there's no need too small. So praise God. If you need prayer for anything tonight, if you just need some encouragement, a boost, prayer for healing, whatever you need, everyone in here, I believe, is born again. If you've not received the baptism of the Holy Ghost, if you don't have the evidence of speaking in tongues, that power that comes, that is pretty awesome, you can receive that tonight if you want it. And so after we're dismissed, which will be in 4 seconds, come on up here and someone will pray with you. Amen? All right, be blessed.